They say laughter is a form of therapy. Today, we're going to explore that. There's a comedian who makes jokes about mental illness, and he's been training stand-up comics for a benefit performance in Alaska. Good morning, and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. This was a subject just too good to pass up. Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255, that's 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, email talk@aprn.org. Today, the subject is Stand Up for Mental Health in the Peer Support Conference on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. No other port in Alaska is building a 100-rail-car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, here we sit in the studios of public television in Anchorage, where we get a little bit better screen presence for what runs on 360 North, and it's a pleasure to be doing it in video as well as audio, and I'm happy that our guests have agreed to do that, because, you know, it's just a different thing, you know. I just have a radio talent, a face made for radio, as they say. But here I am, and here you are, and here they are. Robin Priest is executive director of the Alaska Peer Support Consortium, and you've been at that job how long now?
I've been there a year.
And so this will be your second peer conference?
The conference is every second year at the moment, so it'll be the first one that I've been involved with.
And so this is probably one of the big events of the year for you.
It's a huge event this year. There's, about 250 people coming, and it's been a long kind of process getting it ready and up and running.
Well, I'm going to hold up the book by the guest. We were hoping to get a Skype hookup to get David Grenierer to appear on the show by Skype from Pennsylvania, where he is, but he's in the air right now, so it isn't working out. But fortunately, he has a whole group of people he's been working with, and we have one of them with us. This is Joan Cullinane. Do I have that right?
You sure do.
Hi, Joan. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Steve.
So, not to mess around at all, but somehow all of the people who are doing the comedy have some kind of mental issue.
So how I like to say it is we're all in recovery from mental health issues.
Yeah.
So we use the comedy to feel better because medication is a little overrated. It helps, but you got to really find what works for everybody, and comedy sure works for me.
So back to you, Robin, the Peer Support Consortium.
Yeah.
Is essentially, once again, this is an organization then of people who have one or another type of mental health issue, and they're coming together.
Absolutely. There are, in the consortium, there are 24 different agencies around the state that are all run by people in recovery from mental illness. Some of them are family-to-family groups, but most of them are people who are in recovery, mental illness, drug and alcohol issues, coming together and supporting each other in their communities. Some of those receive funding from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority or the State Division of Behavioral Health, and some of those are just voluntary groups in the community helping each other.
So what are they going to find to talk about? Where is it? Where is it, and what are they going to talk about?
Where's...
The conference.
Sorry. The conference is at the Sheraton in Anchorage on Monday the 11th and Tuesday the 12th. And there's people coming from overseas. There's people coming from the lower 48. So we've got people coming to talk about peer support jobs in the community and talking about how peer support can help whole health. Because people with mental health issues die 25 years younger than the general population. So we need to look at that. So we've got someone talking about that. We've got someone talking about recovery and what services can look like to actually better help people move on with their recovery. We've got people talking about healthy lifestyles and healthy foods, macrobiotic foods. We've got people talking about therapy dogs. We've got people talking about how to do presentations and tell your story so that we can get more things out there. So it's a range of things that people are talking about.
It seems like it's kind of a coming out sort of story. in the sense that it used to be that it was, I mean, obviously it's a private matter. I mean, something going on in your own head. Maybe you're going to have to take medication for it or whatnot. You know, it's not necessarily something you're going to want to share with the whole world, but maybe things are a little better if it is shared a little more.
I guess one of the things, if we think about the statistics in America, there's over 25% of people, and I think it's about 26.2%, percent of people in a given year have a mental health issue, you know, ranging from anxiety and not just I feel a little bit nervous about this, but quite severe anxiety to people with schizophrenia. So if we're thinking about it, one in four people in the general population have it. And I guess it's one of those topics that's been taboo because we often hear in the media that, you know, someone shot someone and the automatic assumption is it's got to be someone with a mental health issue. You know, it's showing that people with mental health issues are actually less likely to be violent than other people and more likely to be the victims of crime than anyone else. So I guess one of the things about this kind of conference and about peer support is saying it's okay to stand up and say that you have a mental health issue or you're recovering from mental illness. It's kind of like what it was, you know, in the last few decades in terms of coming out as gay, those kind of issues. Or, you know, it's a movement. It's kind of a bit like the women's movement or the civil rights movement. It's just a different one.
You know, if you, David, in his book, he has this joke he says a lot about how people are really scared of people who have mental health issues. But really, people with mental health issues are really scared of other people.
Yeah.
So if you turn it around and make it into comedy, you can see that's really more the truth. When you apply for a job in the United States, it's really hard to come out and say, I have a mental health issue. Because, like you said, it's a private decision. You may want to tell your boss beforehand. You may not, because there is so much stigma around it. And so he's taking, just like you said, with the gay rights movement, taking it when people said, I'm queer and I'm here. Why don't we just put it right out there and see what happens?
Yeah. It's still a person's choice.
It better be, because we can't. Right. You don't want to shove someone out of the closet. The people who want to come out, and then they make it, the people who are the pioneers make it easier for other people.
Yeah. So how many people are going to be involved in this comedy show? David's going to be here for this show, right, at the Sheraton.
Yep.
And I guess there's going to be a setup act, and then there's going to be you and how many others?
There's four others, and there's someone from Kisilov, someone from Kenai, and a couple of people from Anchorage.
Oh, my.
So,
from
yeah.
all over the state.
Yeah, and so there's some young people. A person from Kisilov is a younger person, and then there's a range of ages and issues. So I think it's going to be a great night.
Uh-huh. And is this a public event? I mean, it's a fundraiser, so I'm assuming.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. $20 a ticket. You can buy your tickets at the door, or you can go on to our conference website, which is www.peerconference.org, and go through PayPal and buy tickets that way. And if you buy six tickets, you can get them for $100. So get one free.
So it's going to be, but I would assume if Johanna and I decided we wanted to spend the evening that way, that we'd go into this hall and most of the people in there, it would be a little weird to think, these are all people that are at this conference because they have mental health issues.
Oh, are you
it
worrying?
It would be a little challenging.
Are you worrying that you'd be mistaken for one of us?
You know, I'm thinking, what did you say, 25%?
25%, yeah.
I think it's actually higher, probably. I mean, if you got right down to it and you took the whole course of a person's life, or say 4 or 5 years of a person's life, how many of us can say we didn't have a moment when probably it would have been best if we sought some help?
Absolutely.
Yes, it's kind of like if you look at the flu or you look at a cold, there's a spectrum of mental health and mental disability and mental illness, and all of us fall in different places there. I mean, it's just like, once again, if we come back to being gay and being straight, there's many places in between, but no one wants to look at that.
Yeah, so we're dealing with a spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's relative.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what is weird to me is the prevalence of medication nowadays, which I know people on medication, I guess people on nicotine medication, which is a substance issue. People on antidepressant medication, but a number of people just maintaining through their lives through, and even that is kind of a work in progress, it's not as if, you have this mental illness, so we'll correct your chemical imbalance with this other chemical over here. It never works like that.
No, because we can't, stick a needle in your brain. This is why I like working in this field. Mm. I have a degree.
Well, now we're starting to get around to where it's funny.
Yes. So my degree is in drama therapy, and the reason I got that degree is because I was just feeling so bad most of my life, and the only thing that made me feel happy was getting on stage. So that is kind of a medication. It's kind of I think stand-up comics get it too. You get that thrill and you know you're alive. So it's everything's a medication. Donuts are a medication.
So you put people on the stage. This is what you do. This
yes.
is the therapy that you practice.
Yes, we have
tell me more about this.
I have a little
theater
group.
What do you do? How do I sign up for this?
Oh, well.
can I get it prescribed? Can I get my health benefits to cover it?
Well, actually, you can. I mean, drama therapy is a recognized tool in the therapist cookbook. So we have a little theater group over where I work at the Wellness Innovation Center, which is a peer-run center. And we are doing a whole bunch of skits that people brought in, people wrote about their lives. Robin was talking earlier about people telling their story is very therapeutic. But also talking about sex. I mean, this is a big taboo in the mental health world because, like we talk about side effects from medication, a lot of them present sexual side effects. So people want to recovery is about regaining part of your life, and that's part of people's lives that has, kind of disappeared.
Well, yeah, maybe if you're struggling with erectile dysfunction, for instance.
Yes.
Speaking as a male. how could I not be kind of obsessed? How could I not? Well, this would occupy my attention. Some stuff about that would be funny.
Well, I think
it is funny in a painful way, maybe, but still,
yeah,
potentially funny because I'm obsessing.
Yes, and it's a big part of your life, and yet people are scared to talk to their doctor about it because they go, "Well, I have to just take these medications because I have this disease, and I'll have to just live without this the rest of my life." But the more you talk about it, the more you find there are options, like laughing about it and maybe changing something up.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm thinking about, my doctor. He said, "Well, you're getting around that age now. If you need one of those pills, a blue pill or the yellow pill, just let me know."
See, you're using that already to deal with your whatever midlife crisis.
I just think it's funny. Okay, I'm gonna go to this one. Was recommended to me. This was in the New Yorker magazine. It's called the Ambient Cookbook,
and I read that.
I don't even know why it's funny.
It's hysterical.
Okay, but here is a recipe: icebox melange. Ingredients: entire contents of refrigerator, 1 diet Snapple, 5 milligrams of Ambien. Okay, mm-hmm. Those are the ingredients. Take Ambien, fall asleep. Wait 2-3 hours, then sleepwalk to kitchen. Devour everything in refrigerator, including all fancy mustards and jellies, iffy takeout leftovers, and plastic dial from thermostat. Belch loud enough to wake wife or girlfriend. When she enters kitchen, bellow, "Can't you see I'm working here?" Fall asleep on kitchen floor. After 4 or 5 more hours, wake up on subway, fully dressed from the waist up, drinking a diet Snapple. That's funny.
It's funny because it's a side effect, but it's hysterical when you have perspective. That's what humor is. When mm-hmm. you're in, if you wake up on the subway and you've got no pants on, you're going, "Oh my God." But when you think about it, later on, it's like, that's a great story.
So this is the kind of, you worked up material like of this nature here?
Yeah, because, you know, I've done lots of crazy things. And when I did them, I was very unhappy with myself. And that's why I went to see a therapist. But when you look back at it later, you know, like I come from a long family of alcoholics. And when you're a therapist, you know that that usually means in the old days we didn't have medication. So people self-medicated with alcohol.
Oh, yeah. And still are.
Yes,
much.
And absolutely. Still are. Because there's a stigma to go and get help, to talk about the military. I mean, that's one of the tools people use to get by, drinking and cigarettes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you look at something that bad that's happened in the past and you turn it around to make it funny.
Yeah. Well, I applaud your courage to step forward. I know that you like being on stage, so it probably wasn't all that hard.
No, this is an opportunity. I'm addicted to this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. But still, nonetheless, it takes some courage to bring your issues you know, in front of everybody.
Well, see, this is what a storyteller or an actor says. All the issues, you're so happy. Some people say, I'm so glad I had an alcoholic in my life because it gives me so much material. So that's another way of looking at it.
So much material.
True, yeah. True. The things that happen in your life when you have a mental illness are funny. Yeah. I mean, I was telling Joan a story before about my dad. We lived in South Australia, in Australia growing up, and one day he woke up and thought the government was out to persecute him, and the equivalent of the governor was going to make it compulsory to be homosexual. So we had to move states in like, you know, a couple of weeks.
That's an issue.
And it is funny. And now when my dad makes me a little angry, I go, oh, it's your fault. You didn't move me quick enough. You know, and I just think, you know, things like that, at the time it was really stressful, but I look back now and think, that is so funny, you know.
We're talking to Robin Priest, Executive Director of the Alaska Peer Support Consortium, and we're dealing with kind of the issue of stand-up comedy for mental health. And the peer conference is coming up, and it's going to have this comedy event. And there are people with mental patients who are working up their stand-up comedy for this show. And it's open to the public in Anchorage. Crazy, so to speak. Telephone number.
short walk for some of us.
Yes. Telephone number statewide is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling from Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422. And I do have email here, but I'm not sure how functional it is. I'm on the Wi-Fi here, and for some reason the connection is not real great in here, kind of slow. But you may be able to get through at talk@APRN.org if you'd like to join our conversation here. What's so funny about mental illness? And we're finding out quite a bit. Headlining the act, this guy here, he's David Granierer. We were hoping to have him on the show, but he's traveling during the show, so we couldn't get the Skype hookup as we try and combine all our media. I want to find out a little bit more about the peer conference and the sort of resources. You went into it a little bit, Robin. In your time in Alaska, and I said, did you come here from New Zealand, or how did that work?
I moved here from New Zealand at the beginning of last year.
So you haven't really, you can't really distinguish Alaska and our mental health issues from those in the rest of the country.
I've actually been doing a lot of international consulting over a number of years, so I have some really good connections in the lower 48. So I do have a pretty good understanding of what they're doing down
well,
there.
Well, in the health area, I know that there is a certain, especially among Alaska Natives, there's a strong feeling of connection with the Maori of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of reasons for this, but let's just take the basic part of an indigenous population that's been subject to what could be argued are genocidal pressures, certainly huge ancestral trauma.
Yeah.
You know, just look at the flu epidemic in 1918, but I mean, that's just one of many. And now there's significant substance problems, cultural problems, and certainly depression, self-esteem kind of issues, and so forth. I would think that if the peer support system offers a way of reducing more expensive forms of treatment, including drugs, you got a good thing going here.
I think so. I think one of the things when we talk about peer support, and I've done a bit of consulting in different Indigenous groups around the world, a little bit in Australia with the Aboriginal, certainly in New Zealand with Māori, and also in Canada with First Nation and Métis people. And some of the issues talking to people here are so similar, but peer support is what Indigenous nations are founded on.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
exactly.
Is about people supporting each other in the community. And I guess that's one of the things that we want to get back to here, is having people in local communities supporting each other and, you know, being able to come out and say, I've had some of these similar experiences, let's work out how to support you with this. One of the things that people are saying, it's like, you know, being able to come out and saying, I've got a drug and alcohol issue, or I've got a mental illness, is being able to kind of feel like you're part of a community unto itself, because people, you know, have been there and kind of understand that. So it is really important for us to work with those communities, and I've started linking with some of the tribal organisations to start talking about whether there's something we can do to support them develop their own peer support networks.
Yeah, because I would think, like, even within extended families, mm-hmm. and so forth, that there could be some, you know, if people want to pull together, they probably could.
Absolutely.
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And not that they don't. Don't get me wrong. I think people do. They're constantly trying. Well, now we have certainly the long-lasting model of AA to mm-hmm. look at, you know, which is, you know, you can argue for it or against it, and it's certainly got positives and negatives, but one thing it does have is a situation where if a person takes step number one, they're going to have to be subject to not always positive feedback from their peers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe kind of an important thing, because especially, you know, in the substance area, this is often what people need to be told, you're just BSing me. They need to be told that.
So this is why peer support is really key. We're not talking about a professional who's paid to listen and nod their
right.
head.
Mm. And I've known so many people, really smart mental patients, who knew how to get over on their therapist.
Yes.
To get whatever drug it was mm-hmm. that they wanted and stuff like that.
So if you really, really need help, you sometimes we'll go to somebody who will just, if we need somebody to be supportive, we'll find someone who's supportive. Sometimes we need to find help that's honest. And that's why if you have a group of people, there's going to be all those people in the group. There's going to be the person who's going to be dead honest with you. And there's going to be the person who's really nice. And all of us are going to work together to be more flexible. So that if you're nice all the time, that's probably a problem too. Mm. So you learn from the person who's really dead honest all the time. Maybe I should be a little bit more of that. I think that this is about putting the power in the group of people to change. And so that all of us, if we really need it, we can get what we want. It's mm. already there. And sometimes I think of therapy as a placebo effect. I mean, you don't give anybody a medication. They already have the power in them. My boss, Andrea Schmuck, said when she first went into some kind of therapy, they told her, you're not just the problem person, you're also the solution person. Yeah. So instead of putting the power outside in the professional and the medication, you bring it back to the person. And that's what stand-up is. The power is with me. Here I am on the stage. I'm in front of all of you, and I feel like I'm powerful.
Some people feel exactly the opposite, break out into a cold sweat, freeze up.
And that's okay, too, because I really don't like when people say, oh, you got to be confident on stage. If you have no confidence, yeah. show it and love it. And yeah. I think that's what David does, too. He says, the happy neurotic, how fear and angst can lead to happiness.
Right.
Embrace it. Your fear is there to protect you. You should be afraid of some people.
Right. I don't think I've ever told this story, but my first day at the radio station, going into radio in 1961 in WFRM, and it's the rather unfriendly technical guy, the chief engineer, and he does the morning shift on the station. And so I have to show up there, and it's dark, and come in the radio station, says the first thing you got to check is look up on the hill and make sure the tower lights are on. And all this technical stuff I'm trying to learn. And then all of a sudden I'm playing records. And he says, okay, now talk. And he reaches over, he opens up the microphone. And in a radio station, when you open the microphone, the whole room goes dead because all the speakers and everything are going off. And so suddenly all this silence closes in on me. I'm totally frozen up. I can't say a thing. And eventually he claps the mic off. You know, he plays another record. He says, okay, try again. And that was the deal. Yeah. You know, and I'm not the only person this has had to. It happened to, you know, Larry King tells the same story. Mm. The reason Larry King became a good talker is because he went through that end of the diving board moment when the deep end of the pool, mm-hmm. and then it was like his boss is standing right behind him insisting that he talk. So he talks about how he's scared to talk.
And well, that's it.
It was the same thing you're saying.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I didn't talk for like a year. And
wow.
The only reason, it's called like selective mutism or something. But they.
Beautiful name. Beautiful name.
I know. Yeah, it's wonderful. We'll put in that. You can put that in my resume now. But they put me on stage. That was the thing. And then I said, like, whoa, yeah, now I'll talk. You can't get me to stop. Wow. And also it let me show the emotions that were taboo. I could show anger because I had a lot of anger, but I felt like I couldn't say it. So to be able to show fear, and we just damp that down in our society. It's really therapeutic to just open up and say how you be successful is to have those emotions, not to squash them.
So how do you deal with when you're doing your therapy, you know, in what was the place where you work?
I work over at the Wellness Innovation Center.
Wellness Innovation Center.
Yes.
Do you have a little stage there?
You know, we have gone and used the stage at Out North a few times. Uh-huh. We actually did a performance over there, and we're hoping to do another one. But we just use a big room.
Yeah, that's a nice one because it's small.
It is. It's small. Yeah. And their mission is to give voice to people who don't usually have a voice in theater. So it's really helpful to get people over there and say, wow, we're not just performing for the mental health community. We can perform for anyone.
So I'm trying to figure out how you do therapy on somebody that's scared. You know, when it just said, I'm not comfortable getting in front of a bunch of, what do?
You know, well, some people will start off just handing out the programs. Okay, or some people, we have a video camera, and they'll say, will you hold the camera?
You be on the crew.
Yes, you be on the crew. And then
we do the same thing when we're training people for radio. You find not everybody wants to be on the radio.
That's
some
right.
of them want to run the equipment. You know, that's fine.
And we have a couple people who don't like to talk, so we give them a silent rule.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's fine.
Yeah.
So there's lots of ways. It's mostly about fun. You know, if you think about it, mental health is being able to have fun and enjoy your life.
So how would you get someone referred to you?
Well, you know, the Wellness Innovation Center is funded by the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Mm-hmm. So we are open to anybody in the Anchorage area who feels like they're in recovery or want to recover from mental health issues. And we're over at 2735 East Tudor Road, and we serve lunch Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And we don't just serve lunch. You got to make the lunch. So everybody works there. So you can either help clean up, you help serve the lunch, or you help make it.
So it'd be a voluntary thing that a person would come into the... I'm trying to think if someone was like... How would somebody would get referred? Would they come from a counselor? Would they come from...
Some people come from counselors. Mm-hmm. Like we'll get people from a South Central Foundation. We are in a building that's owned by Anchorage Community Mental Health Services, so mm-hmm. they refer a lot of people. But API refers people, the Crisis Respite Center. People will just come out of the community when they hear about us. Because we don't say, you have to have... you have to take medication or you have to have a psychiatrist. You just come. We'll find you a place for you.
I wish we had an actual stage instead of your sitting here right beside me, because when we get back after the break, you know, I want to ask you to actually do a little bit. Would you be willing to do a little bit of your routine?
Sure.
Okay, and we'll just sit here. Robin and I will be your audience and laugh or not laugh. Or
depending on whether you're funny.
Okay.
Yeah. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com. And by the Association of Alaska School Boards. AASB believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org.
It is Talk of Alaska, the telephone number 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at APRN.org. That may or may not be working. I don't see any messages. And we do have a call from Sitka, which I will be going to momentarily. But first, as promised, ladies and gentlemen, Joan Cullinane.
Hey, my name's Joan, and I am not an alcoholic. I just act like one. So people started asking me if I was an alcoholic at 4 years old because, you know, it's just not acceptable to label a four-year-old with a mental illness. It's much more hopeful to call him a drunk. And, you know, my father was the head of the town, so he was an alcoholic. So it looked like my chances in life were quite bright being an alcoholic. But I'm not. You know, they say that people who don't have a father in their life, they grow up with what we call an anxious style of attachment to others. But that's not true for me because I did have a father. He died, but my mother tried to keep him alive in her resentments. And anyway, I had Captain Kirk, but then didn't everybody. So my family, I have to explain, they're all Irish. So we like to joke around and annoy people. But I have an extra special talent. See, I can do it without alcohol. So you know how when you make a Bloody Mary without booze, they call it a Virgin Mary? So I make what's called Virgin Mayhem. And after you have Virgin Mayhem in your head and in your life, you get what's called a Virgin Hangover. And those things can last for like 3 days before you get a resurrection. It's kind of like getting a divorce without having the marriage. And a virgin hangover, let me clarify, it is not a migraine. It is a my, you, and everybody else grain. It's kind of like a toxic cocktail of blame and neurotransmitters, which it can be fatal. Never, ever email when you're under the influence of a virgin hangover. Because I'll tell you, you've got to wait 24 hours or consult with a physician or horrible consequences will ensue. And never sleep with the roommate of your current lover when you're under the influence of a virgin hangover. And if you're not under the influence and you do that, just let me know how that works. Did you want to hear any more?
That's great.
That's good enough.
Thanks. Got you rolling now.
Yeah. That's good practice.
Yeah. Well, let's see if I can hear the phone call and see if you can hear the phone call. This is Cornelia, joins the program from Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Cornelia.
Well, thank you. I thought the joke that I was speaking before was pretty funny. Okay, I have a couple concerns here. I'm actually with NAMI, National Alaska Mental Illness Veterans Council. I'm also chair for the Women Veterans Subcommittee. Okay, a couple things happened. Since 10 years ago, September 10 years ago, 9/11, when we started deploying troops, we haven't seen an increase of anxiety disorder among family members and children, besides secondary post-traumatic stress disorder. What secondary post-traumatic stress disorder means? Family members who have someone in their home who has post-traumatic stress disorder is just as much affected as the person with PTSD itself. So, and in the meantime, resources and funding has gone down, down, and down. Services are not available. People with a mental illness and the family members volunteering the time, getting the word out more and more and more, trying somehow to fit the needs of the community, including the veterans, also ain't happening. The biggest concern I also have, I see more and more of domestic violence in the communities, especially in Sitka and throughout the United States and Alaska. This is not being addressed. Shelters, the funding is being cut. They're unable to serve more and more people with mental health disability, anxiety disorders, victims of domestic violence and such. And yet it's the volunteers who keep people connected, trying them to be more self-sufficient. Peer-to-peer seems to work quite well. But again, it's all for volunteers. And believe it or not, some people are starting to burn out. So what can we do? How can we get the word across that we need more funding for mental health?
Well, I guess you just call up Talk Radio and do what you can.
Okay. So we need more funding in mental health, including assistance with organizations like the Alaska Consumer Mental Health Lab, the Trust, NAMI, Community Mental Health Services, da-da-da-da-da. We need to have a better outreach program saying, oh, it's safe to talk. Yes, I can talk. I have a safe place to go to. I just heard a few minutes ago about the luncheon on Tudor. First time I heard it, so I'm up in Anchorage quite a bit. But, you know, it's very frustrating and very tiring to try and fill in the gap. And usually those are the people who have a mental illness or family members of somebody with a mental illness. And the burnout rate is becoming very evident. We need to get the word out that we need funding, that we need programs that are already established, but we need funding so the programs can be expanded upon, be it peer-to-peer, vet-to-vet, what have not. The wellness program and all that fun stuff.
That's Cornelia, I want to thank you for your call and for for standing up for all these things. And I don't know how you do it.
I'm very tired.
Hi, Cornelia. It's Robin.
I am very tired.
One of the things that we're doing is we have been talking to many of the legislators, particularly about peer support, and talking about some of the research about combining peer support with the clinical kind of services and the outcomes that we're getting. A recent study, and I think some of the legislators have heard this, a recent study in New York where they put peer bridges into psychiatric wards where people previously were coming back and back into the ward. 60% of people were returning. You know, once they had peer bridges in there and were supporting people to move out, within 2 years, that went down to 19%. Now, for me, that's kind of a no-brainer. Clinical services are the high end and the expensive ones, and there is a workforce shortage. There is an untapped market out there in terms of peer support. But I guess one of the things for me is that you're right, Cornelia, we continually ask peers to volunteer. And one of the things for me, we never ask the psychiatrist or the psychologist or the social workers to volunteer 40 hours a week. We kind of value that position in society, and yet we're asking families and peers to continually volunteer. And I think what we need to do is look at that issue. I'm not saying that we need the same kind of money that clinical services do, but I'm saying that we need some kind of evening out of that, because the research is showing peer support in conjunction with other stuff is making huge difference in people's lives. So I guess all we can do is keep talking to our legislators and get, if we're talking one in four people in the community and then adding the families, if every one of those people could go and talk to their legislators, I think legislators would start listening a little more.
So I'm going to add a different perspective here, which is that even the professionals are burned out. So instead of putting us against them, because a lot of the professionals also have mental health issues, but they don't feel able to say it because of all the stigma, I think that we have to look at a model of interdependence,
yes,
which is that instead of volunteering to help this, volunteering, helping each other. Mm-hmm. And really, that's the kind of peers that I want to hire, is somebody who's already in a support group and knows what a support group is, so that they don't get burned out as fast, and that everybody who's working should get a paycheck that is equal, because they're equally not necessarily educated in a college, but educated in life. So I think there's a real equality with everybody who's going to be working in the field, and everybody needing an interdependent support system. And it's, you're right, if we don't get funding, we better make it ourselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly, Joan, the numbers you're putting forward just indicate that if the peer system can reduce the other costs, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cornelia, thanks for your call from Sitka.
Oh, okay. I was going to say something else.
Okay. Yeah, and I think you were speaking probably for a lot of professionals that are seeing an increase in the mental health workload.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, since 9/11.
I guess one of the things, too, is, Joan was saying a lot of people working in the mental health field do have mental illness, in recovery from mental illness. And they do, and I guess that's one of the biggest places that discrimination occurs, and people are too nervous to come out, and say, yes, I have this. And if we could work out a way where we could say to people, it's safe to come out, it's okay, there would be a huge number of peers working out there.
I'll tell you something and this is brought up by Mary Miner, and here we have maybe an example of, I don't know, you tell me what you think, each of you, maybe denial showing up on the screen in the form of Charlie Sheen.
Yeah,
well, is this an opportunity for discourse here, or is this really sick and sad, or what is it?
This is a thing that it gets people talking. Charlie Sheen is a public figure. There are a lot of public figures. I've been doing improv and comedy for a long time, and I think that many of us go into working in mental health because we have mental health issues, myself included, and many people like myself go into performing because we have mental health issues. There are some people who are just extraordinarily talented. That's great. But I think a lot of us need attention. A lot of us need a stage. A lot of us have so much energy that it attracts other people. So, he may have some issues. I'm not going to diagnose him, but, it gets people talking. And, of course, it may give a little bad reputation to people with mental health, but we all have our days. And people, I say this in my comedy routine, that people like hearing about my life because it's kind of like disaster therapy. You see somebody else going crazy and go like, wow, that's funny. I hope that never happens to me. And I feel bad because, we watch people who are having a bad time. And we read about them in the paper and we go, that's not me. But if you look at it in a kind of a spectrum, that is me. And that's the problem I see when I see a difference, when we see, you're the provider, you're well, and you're the patient, you're sick. Yeah. It's really, Charlie Sheen is all of us. There is Charlie Sheen in all of us, and that's why we're watching it, because we're fascinated. There's part of me that's in him, and I go, yeah, I want to dance on the table. Yeah, I want to say all these crazy things. And it's not so far away. Like Robin said, it's only a step away.
Yeah. Well, Mary's thought is that what did these people that paid money to see him expect? Why are they asking for the money back? Didn't they want to watch a train wreck in the first place?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's true, isn't it? And I guess one of the things is, a number of us often have issues, but it's not quite as public as what's happening with Charlie Sheen. And people are like, yeah, let's watch. And, you're right. He's having a bad time at the moment, and we need to respect him for that.
Let's see if we can go to Catherine joining the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi.
I've been really disgusted with your program today. I listen all the time, and I'm a recovering alcoholic, and you're just making fun of alcoholics.
Oh, I think that was, I think that was just Joan that was doing that, not me.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
And my son is a stand-up comedian in New York City, and he grew up in Anchorage. And I just want to tell you that it's just breaking my heart that you're making fun of the alcoholics who have a long road to recovery. It's very difficult.
Well, I can take that since I did talk a bit about alcoholics. You know, I really want to put this out in the air, that it's something that we all can talk about in our own personal experience. So I can talk about my dad because I know what it was like.
No,
and I really feel like...
But you proudly claim that you are not an alcoholic.
Yes, I just act like one. Because if you take a look at alcoholism, there is a mental health issue behind it. And so the reason I act like, you might say, an alcoholic is because that's what I am. I'm a person with a really bad mental health issue, but I don't use alcohol because I can't. And
well,
I really want to put this
you.
Out there
aren't,
is that...
Aren't you a saint?
No, I'm not a saint. But let me tell you this. Part of being a stand-up comic is to actually know that you're not going to please everyone and you are going to offend some people. So I feel bad that you didn't like what I said, but I also know I'm doing my job. Because if you bring this issue up, then people will talk about it.
Well, that's all. It still breaks my heart. I'm working on myself, and I'm still having a difficult time, and a lot of people out there are. So don't you make it sound so easy.
No, I don't think we're making... we're not trying to make it sound easy, I don't think.
Absolutely. We're not trying to make it easy. And I'd be really keen to talk to you after the show if you'd like to talk to me. My office is at NAMI, 144 West 15th. Or feel free to give me a call. And, you know, what we want
to
do is support people.
NAMI.
Pardon?
They aren't like you.
Okay, so I have another thing that I know you're probably not going to listen to me, but... There is a program for people who have alcoholics in their family, and it's called Al-Anon, and it's very helpful. And there's a lot of hope there and a lot of humor. And so I encourage you, they have meetings all over town, and you can look it up, Al-Anon, Alaska, and go there because you'll find some hope and you'll find some love, and it will get better. And I know because it's gotten better for me.
Looks like we lost Catherine there. But
can I just say, Catherine, if you're still listening, there's a place in Anchorage called the Alaska Women's Recovery Project. And they support women in recovery from alcohol and drug issues. And they do an excellent job. And they have groups. And they work specifically with women. So I would encourage you to contact them. They're on Northern Lights. I'd also encourage you to contact me if you'd like to talk to me. You might not, but certainly Alaska Women's Recovery Project is a good place.
Yeah, I knew when I promoted this program with the line of what's so funny about mental illness that it was going to be controversial. But I hope what we're trying to get across in this program is that sometimes you're better off if you get something out to where you can talk about it, as opposed to being hidden away in the private corners where it's just festering.
Yeah, because unfortunately there is a lot of pain that people need to deal with privately. And they can do that with a therapist and they can do that with their own support group. But there's some of us who are going to do it differently. And we're going to do it out there. And one of the things I've discovered is it's not about everybody liking me. It's about me being myself. And that's what stand-up comedy is about, too. It's about being yourself and putting it out there and saying, yeah, some people aren't going to like me.
Yeah. And this is not about laughing at other people.
No, it's
that's
about
not
laughing
what
at
this
ourselves.
Is.
Laughing at ourselves.
It's a person being willing to come out and say, look, I got this issue. I'm having these problems with my medication, whatever it is, you know, and getting it out there in front of everyone else where we can all laugh together and people can feel the support of other people.
Yep.
You know,
that's what we're talking about, isn't
right.
it? I mean, that's what I thought we were talking about.
Absolutely.
You know, I saw
so
a
if
performance.
It was misunderstood, you know, I'm very sorry.
No, I think it was understood. I think that people are just in different places in their lives. And so, you know, some people aren't going to want to go to a stand-up comedy performance about mental health. But there are people out there who I'd say take the risk and you might enjoy it. Just like when I talk about, you know, AA and Al-Anon, there's a lot of humor there. And you can only make fun of yourself. And that's why I stick to my family and my stuff. I don't make fun of other races and other creeds and things. But I've seen a lot of people who do stand up, and there's usually somebody in the audience who will come up and say, that's offensive. And the person will stop and listen and then kind of go on, because that's all you can do.
I'm kind of impressed by that. We're talking about mental health, mental illness, stand up for mental health, stand up comedy. Yes, it's controversial. The phone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Another email here on the screen when Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. For information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder-to-shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com.
Quickly, email came in response to that last call from Jan, who says, hey, I just want to say that I think you folks have tried to express humor about a very difficult situation, and that's the point. Don't take the jokes about alcoholics as mean, but as a way of laughing about a serious and painful situation. I haven't taken any offense at all. I'm a member of a 12-step program. From Jan.
Thank you, Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
Yeah. But this business of, you know, certainly with alcohol, it's the whole family that gets hit by it, you know. You know, everybody, just as our caller from Sitka was saying, you know, we have family members with post-traumatic stress, mm-hmm. You know, we got the same thing here.
This is the new focus of a lot of work in recovery is trauma-informed care, because everybody is going to have trauma in their life. You look at the people in Japan, they have trauma. And you can only have humor about trauma when you have a bit of perspective. So you have to have a little perspective to do that, but it's universal trauma.
Well, David Grenierer has arrived at State College, where his next gig is, and I asked if he would call when he got there, so he did. So I think we're connected with him. So
yes.
Let's see if we hi, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Great. And you've been working with Joan and some of these other people, as I understand it. We have Joan
yes,
with us.
Yes, I have.
So how do you think they're going to do? Is this going to just be people who are acquainted with the issue in a personal sort of way that are going to find this stuff funny, or can the rest of us enjoy it too?
I think everyone can enjoy it, because it's not only funny, it's just good comedy material. And I think good comedy material goes over in almost any situation. So, yeah, I think they're going to do great, and I think a lot of people will be able to relate to it.
So your book, The Happy Neurotic, How Fear and Angst Can Lead to Happiness and Success, it was just handed to me. Obviously, I haven't read it. I did watch some videos of some of your routines, and I laughed, I will say. So, but can you give me a little thumbnail on what you're getting across in this book? I mean, you've got mental health problems,
yes.
And you do stand-up comedy.
Yes. And the point of the book is that you can be happy, productive, and well-adjusted while remaining as neurotic as ever. So basically, I think that a lot of the times we're told that we have to get to a place where we're completely confident and spiritually centered and all that kind of stuff. And I'm basically saying that place doesn't exist. But that if you use your fears and your neurosis and stuff like that as great motivation, it's amazing what you can achieve.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you calling. I'm sure you're a pretty busy guy there. What's the weather like there in State College?
It's about 39 degrees, overcast. There was a bit of snow earlier.
Man, that's the same thing as Anchorage,
yeah.
Except we have more snow.
Yeah,
you'll be
right
at home, David.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be happy to welcome you when you get up here.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, I'm going to go to another call here. Amber in Palmer, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Amber.
Hello, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed your show today.
Okay, well, good. It's been a little clumsy, but so it goes.
I'm pretty impressed. I think I'm going to listen to your show more often.
Well, I'll try and make it clumsy for you again. Yeah, go ahead.
If I want to attend this conference, can I still register for this conference?
I think you can even do it online, right?
You can still register. You can, again, it's registrations at www.peerconference.org. And peer, for those of you who can't understand my accent, is P-E-E-R. So www.peerconference.org.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
And the location, once again, is Sheraton?
It's at the Sheraton, Monday the 11th and Tuesday the 12th.
So we're coming right up on it.
Absolutely.
Probably this is the next place. David, are you still with us?
I'm still with you.
Yeah, so you'll be getting into town here pretty soon then.
Yes, I will.
Talk of Alaska. Oh, my heavens. Are we running out of time? Oh. Clumsy. Just plain clumsy. Harry, you're on Talk of Alaska.
Hi there.
Hey, Harry Crawford. You only got about a minute here, so.
Right. Well, today is the day we get to vote on Prop 11. This is something to help people that have a problem with alcohol, to keep away from alcohol. And we don't want store owner to aid and abet them getting alcohol when they've been ordered by the courts not to buy, consume, or enter the premises where alcohol is sold.
Okay, yeah, that's the local election in Anchorage, but and this is a statewide show. But Harry, I wish I'd got you earlier because I'd love to get you going on the subject of gambling addiction.
Ooh, that's another big subject that I'd love to talk with you on.
Another time, Harry Crawford. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I want to thank the both of you for coming in and participating in this experiment. Robin Priest.
Thank you.
And Joan Cullinane.
Thank you, Steve.
And we'll all get ready to laugh next week at the peer conference.
I hope to see a lot of people there. We can fit 1,000 people at the Sheraton, so come on in. It's $20 or $6 for $100.
Okay.
Monday night.
All right,
7:00.
Next week on Talk of Alaska, it'll be Creative Economy, the Creative Economy. Dave Waldman on controls, Josh Edge on the phones, and the whole TV crew as well. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska,
the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com, Finn Air, with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States, details online at finnair.com, and by the Association of Alaska School Boards, AASB, promotes one-to-one digital learning for all Alaska students to prepare them for success in the global economy. More information at aasb.org. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.